We're talking with Wisconsin Democratic Attorney General Josh Call here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's Justice Department released its State Crime Lab annual report last week, and this report puts numbers on the lab's work in 2018. The three state crime labs in Milwaukee and Madison and Wausau, they analyze evidence sent by local and state law enforcement agencies. And the state crime lab technicians, they analyze evidence and respond to crime scenes all over the state. Their analysis includes DNA samples from thousands of sexual assault kits. And over the past several years, the state crime lab has tried to address a backlog of untested kits. What questions do you have for Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call? What do you think about the state's approach to testing backlogged sexual assault kits? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Attorney General Josh Call, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So the crime lab has seen big changes in just the past year. We requested data from the crime lab and found the number of cases left pending each month has been trending down for drugs. It's been trending down for guns and fingerprints. How much of that trend is from your predecessor and how much is from changes you've made since taking office 5 months ago?
So first, one of my priorities at the Department of Justice is to make sure that our crime labs are operating efficiently and that they are providing objective, rigorous scientific analysis. They're in a process of continually working to improve what they're doing, examining their workflows, examining their approach to submissions of evidence. So it's an ongoing process, and it certainly predates my being part of the office, but it's something that has continued. And it's really critical that our crime labs are operating effectively because, as you said, they test all sorts of different types of evidence. There can be cases that sometimes make headlines where they're able to identify a suspect or perhaps exonerate somebody. But day in and day out, they do analysis that contributes to investigations, identifying what drug might be in evidence that's submitted, for example. And that work is a critical part of our criminal justice system. So making sure our crime labs are working effectively matters in cases around the state. So it's something that we need to get right and that we are continually working to improve on.
The number of pending DNA cases has also been trending down since last fall when hundreds of cases were being left untested for more than 3 months. Still more than 1,000 DNA cases were waiting at the end of April. How much of a problem is that?
Well, the longer that the wait time is for testing, the longer it can take to potentially do the things I mentioned, to identify a suspect or to make sure that a court case is proceeding. It's in the interests of victims of crime for this evidence to be tested quickly. It's in the interests of defendants of crime who are waiting to have their cases. And it's in the interest of our criminal justice system to make sure these cases are moving quickly. And so one of the things that we have included in our budget request, and our budget is actually being heard by the Joint Finance Committee today, is additional forensic specialists who can assist with the work being done by our DNA analysts. Our analysis indicates that we think we have enough DNA analysts to address the delay in testing right now, but those analysts need to spend their time analyzing evidence, and instead, too much of their time is used doing other things like preparing that evidence for testing or working on reports. If we can hire forensic specialists, they can take some of that workload, and I believe we can get our average turnaround times to where we want them to be.
So you're looking at asking for 15 more positions for a cost of around $1.8 million over the biennium?
That's correct. So we would like to add 10 forensic specialists who would help in a few different ways, including with DNA. Some would help with controlled substances. We've requested two additional firearms examiners as well. Right now we have a firearms analysis unit in Milwaukee. We would like to have one in Madison as well. If we have two more analysts, we would have that analysis done in Madison too. The other thing is with just the number of analysts we have, and this is part of the reason there's a lag time right now, if there's a retirement or a vacancy for any other reason, that can create problems. And so by having two additional positions there, we would help guard against that. And then We've also requested three people who can help with their primary focus being crime scene response. Those are people who go out to crime scenes when there's a significant event and make sure that evidence is processed in the most scientifically valid way possible. So we've requested additional positions, and we've requested pay progression for certain positions as well, so that we don't spend state resources training folks who then leave, but instead we are able to keep them working at the Wisconsin State Crime Labs.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to John joining us from Green Bay. Hi, John.
Hi. I don't know if you've talked about this or not, but I'm wondering if the statute of limitations for certain crimes gets suspended because of forensic testing.
In specific types of cases, John, or which types of cases are you thinking of?
Let's say sexual assault.
So the statute of limitations varies based on the type of crime that's committed. But one thing that we do at the crime labs is that they are made aware by the law enforcement officers who submit evidence about relevant deadlines. So if there's a court case coming up, for example, we ask law enforcement to make the crime lab aware of that so that they know that that case has to be prioritized. You know, in cases involving sexual assault where there's not a known suspect, those are cases where we want to get the evidence turned around as quickly as possible so we can try to identify a suspect and hopefully make sure that somebody who's dangerous can be arrested. So the crime lab does prioritize when there are issues that come up, and that's one of the ways they make sure to stay on top of things like upcoming court dates.
We're talking with Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. You can join in 800-642-1234. What do you want the Justice Department to focus on in the coming years? What are your concerns about sexual assault kits? Have you ever been a victim of sexual assault? You have a line to join the conversation at 800-642-1234. The Justice Department recently released its annual State Crime Lab report, which highlights both the accomplishments and the areas for improvement across 2018. And there's a lot of information in this annual report, but the data about the crime lab's testing of sexual assault kits is getting a lot of that attention. Can you speak to the amount of testing that was done in the last year and what the impetus was for that?
So going back a few years, Wisconsin was one of many states that looked at the issue of untested sexual assault kits. An inventory was conducted of kits around the state, which were being stored in evidence lockers in different law enforcement agencies around Wisconsin. Those kits were then collected. A determination was made regarding which kits needed to be tested. And they were the majority were tested, but some weren't either because there was a conviction already in the case or in some instances because there was not consent to test the kit from the survivor. So what Wisconsin did under my predecessor was test all of the kits in which there was no from cases in which there was no conviction, but there was consent from the survivor to test the kit. We are now testing about 300 additional kits from cases in which there was a conviction. But it was a large project. Over 4,000 kits were tested. The testing was conducted by outside labs for the most part, but those kits were then sent back to the Wisconsin Crime Labs to do things like verification of the testing. And so that's something that our crime labs participated in, as well as these out-of-state labs. It's really critical that we did this testing process. And the reason is that if somebody comes forward, reports a sexual assault and has this evidence collected, we want them to know that if they want that evidence to be submitted to the crime labs, that it's going to be, and that we are going to do what we can to get justice in cases involving sexual assault. One of the things that's resulted from this testing process is that there are some cases where DNA matches were identified. There have now been eight prosecutions that have been based on the testing that's been conducted so far. And the review of the evidence from these cases in which kits were tested is continuing, and I anticipate that there will be more prosecutions as well. One other thing I'll note is that this helped identify a problem that we had in Wisconsin, which is that Sexual assault cases didn't receive the priority that they should have. We are working to address that. We've requested an additional prosecutor in our budget who would focus on sexual assault cases. And along with a bipartisan group of legislators, we've introduced legislation that's intended to prevent Wisconsin from ever having another backlog of untested sexual assault kits.
And where is that legislation at currently?
So the legislation has been introduced in both the state assembly and the state senate. It has just short of 50 sponsors. It's a bipartisan group. We have had a lot of support for it. Joining us at the press conference announcing the legislation, among others, was a representative for the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, as well as a representative for a coalition of sexual assault nurse examiners. I think this is a bill that has the kind of support that it needs to pass. And my hope is that the legislative committees that it's been referred to will take it up soon and that it will move quickly through the legislative process.
Attorney General, how long does it typically take to test one sexual assault kit? Like, what is that turnaround time, start to finish?
It can vary depending on the kit. And the reason is that the kits, it's basically a process that a sexual assault nurse examiner goes through and collects several different types of evidence. So what evidence is available can vary case by case. But it includes, first of all, collecting the evidence. Then that evidence, if there's a report to law enforcement, goes to law enforcement, which submits the evidence to the crime labs. And then when the crime labs test that evidence, it gets turned around and is sent back to law enforcement. But because of the volume of evidence that can be included in a sexual assault kit, it can take some time to have the testing process complete. It can be over 10 hours of analyst work on a single sexual assault kit.
Talking with State Attorney General Josh Call about the State Crime Lab annual report and other topics as well, you can join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking with Attorney General Josh Call on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Joint Finance Committee meets this afternoon to take up the Justice Department's budget, which includes funding the state crime labs. The DOJ seeks an additional $1.9 million to address pay disparities when you compare wages to other crime labs in the region. The budget also includes, as we've been talking about, 15 new positions. What questions do you have for Attorney General Josh Call? Should the crime labs be expanding? How involved should Wisconsin be in federal lawsuits involving things like opioids, health care, or abortion? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go back to the phones now with Sue joining us from Cambridge. Hi, Sue.
Hi, good morning. I just was calling because I've been listening to a lot of the things on WPR lately, and I have a concern or a question. I'm wondering if there's any data relating to the number of untested sexual assault kits. I don't know if I have this right. And unwanted pregnancies. Any data suggesting that unwanted pregnancies have occurred because of rape or sexual assault kits that have not been tested? And if the abortion laws change, how would all of that play?
Sue, thanks so much for the question. Attorney General?
I'm not aware of any data that relates to that issue specifically. As Sue, you've probably heard, there's some legislation that's pending right now that the governor has indicated that he would veto concerning reproductive rights. And this is an important issue. With the confirmation of Justice Kavanaugh, I think that there's a real possibility that reproductive rights are going to be further restricted. And one of the things that I've been proud to do as Attorney General is withdraw Wisconsin's support from two cases involving restrictions to abortion rights in other states. We're also part of a multi-state lawsuit that's challenging changes to the Title X program, a program that provides funding for primarily for low-income families for family planning services. The the changes to that program that have been announced by the Trump administration would reduce access to those services significantly, and I believe are really targeted at Planned Parenthood. We are part of a challenge to that regulation because I believe that it's both going to be harmful to Wisconsinites if it goes into effect, and I believe that the changes that were made are inconsistent with the law.
Why do you think it will be harmful for Wisconsinites? Why do you think this is the right direction for Wisconsin?
The changes that have been proposed to Title 10 would mean that a lot of service providers that that use Title 10 funding would not be in compliance with the rules that they would now need to be in compliance with, and Planned Parenthood would essentially be prevented from being a Title 10 provider. And again, these are family planning services provided primarily for low-income families. Title 10 funds do not, even under the current structure, pay for abortion services. These are other family planning services. Nonetheless, the administration has added these restrictions. And the practical effect for Wisconsin would be that there'd be a significant reduction in the family planning services that were available. I think that's clearly harmful to the health of Wisconsinites.
You recently told the Wisconsin State Journal that you fully anticipate your office will at some point have to defend Act 10, and that is Governor Walker's signature legislation that strips state employees of their collective bargaining rights. While Act 10 has been held up in court before, there is a new legal challenge. What is your approach to Act 10?
So my approach to Act 10 is the same approach that we take to any Wisconsin state statute, which is that if there's a legal challenge brought to a statute, the Department of Justice is the attorney for the state. And we generally defend state law so long as there's a legally defensible basis to do that. The statutes provide that the Department of Justice has a duty to defend state law. Now, if there's no legally defensible basis, there's another consideration there. We can only take legally defensible positions in court. And, you know, there could be a case where we have a conflict, which in one of the extraordinary session cases, for example, we declined to represent the governor's office because the Department of Justice had a substantial interest. But generally speaking, regardless of my personal view on an issue, the approach of the Department of Justice is to defend state law. And that's important for a couple reasons. One is if the Department of Justice doesn't defend legislation, it's not as though the legislation then is just invalid. What happens instead is that somebody else would come in and defend the laws. I think that the state's lawyer should be the entity that's taking legal positions on behalf of the state. The other thing is when you are hiring outside counsel to come into these cases, it can be costly to the state because you're then paying outside counsel to defend statutes instead of the AG. So generally speaking, the approach is that we defend state laws.
There are some Republicans who don't trust that. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said, we can't sit idly by and allow our attorney general or governor an opportunity to undermine Act 10. So if you're put in this position of defending this law in court, would you do it to the best of your ability?
Yeah, that's part of what goes with defending the statutes. I mean, I do think it's important for the attorney general to think broadly about the interests of the state and making sure that if we're taking a legal position in this case, that it wouldn't be harmful to a legal position that we're taking in other cases and perhaps undermine state law elsewhere. But that's one of the reasons it should be our attorney general who's representing the state in these cases rather than, an outside firm that might not have the broader interests of state law in mind. You know, the other thing I would say with respect to the majority leader's comments is Wisconsinites made a decision about who they thought the state's attorney should be for litigation. Everybody knows what the powers and the duties of the AG were prior to the last election. That's the voters' decision to make. It's not the majority leader's or anybody else's decision. And, the voters can decide whether we are adequately representing the state in litigation. But as I've made clear, we are defending the state where we believe it's appropriate and we'll continue to do so.
Last month, Wisconsin filed a lawsuit against OxyContin manufacturer Purdue Pharma over marketing practices. Why did you want to get Wisconsin involved in this lawsuit?
So the opioid epidemic is, I think, the most significant public safety issue that we face. It's a serious public health challenge for communities across the state and across the country. And I think there are a number of things we need to be doing to respond to it effectively. But one of them is, I think that we need accountability for anybody whose unlawful practices meaningfully contributed to this epidemic. And what we've alleged in our complaint is that Purdue Pharma and Richard Sackler engaged really in a campaign to change public opinion with respect to the prescription of opioids, and particularly to change prescribing practices. If you go back to the mid-90s, the volume of opioids prescribed was far, far lower than it is now. But Purdue, we allege, undertook this concerted effort to both downplay the risks of opioids and to overstate the benefits of opioids. And we have seen the results of that. The numbers of prescriptions have increased dramatically, and the effects of that have been devastating for people around the state. There's no question that there are particular situations in which an opioid prescription is appropriate, but it's also clear to me that they've been overprescribed.
And you have precedent here. In 07, you were in Wisconsin, one of 25 other states, won $19.5 million settlement. So there is precedent here. What type of settlement might be possible?
That's right. There was a settlement with Purdue in 07, and we've alleged that Purdue continued to engage in deceptive marketing practices even after that settlement. It's certainly possible that this case will result in a settlement. We are also investigating, we're part of a multi-state investigation into distributors of opioids and manufacturers of opioids. And, you know, how that all works out with settlement is going to be a complex issue because there are many states that have been impacted. There are multiple different corporations that whose conduct is at issue. And, you know, cities and counties around the country and some tribes have also brought suit. So settling is going to be a complicated matter. But the harm to Wisconsinites and to people around the country has been severe. And any settlement should reflect that so that we can get funding for remediation of this epidemic.
Attorney General, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Josh Call is Wisconsin's Attorney General. Just ahead, video game addiction is now classified as a mental health disorder by the Wisconsin Health Organization. And our guest explains the behaviors that come with this diagnosis and why video games can be addictive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.